We saved serious cash with our Progressive Home and Auto Bundle and used the money to buy a new boat.
Who's ready to water ski?
This is not a real testimonial. Sure, customers can save big money with Progressive, but not enough for a new boat. They'll probably spend it on rent or gas money or maybe one of those little plastic wading pools for the yard.
Ahoy there!
Is what the captain might say. On the toy boat. In your wading pool. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shortlift. This show is heard on WBCQ, The Planet, every Monday and Thursday evenings at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also pick up most of our shows on our Podomatic page, podomatic.com, and also on our YouTube channel. This show is brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among all things, runs a week-long family camp. And this year's camp will be held at the Singing Hills Christian Camp and Conference Center, Plainfield, New Hampshire, from July 18th, Sunday afternoon, until Friday morning, July 23rd. And like every year, we have an incredible lineup of instructors and lots of activity planned for the folks that show up. We have great amenities. The camp, you can visit the website, just go to singinghills.com, I think, and you could see the beautiful lodges, the lodging there. It's very comfortable. I know when some people think of a camp, they might think of tents and mud and whatever, rain coming into the tents and all kinds of challenges, but this is, it's very comfortable. Each room has its own shower. Now, we have whole families that come. In some cases, the families will have their own room. Other cases, mom and dad might have their own room, and the youngsters would be in the dorms for the boys and in the rooms for the girls. The camp has a small pond and also an above-ground swimming pool, hiking trails, basketball, volleyball, a gaga pit, swing sets for the little ones, shooting. We do some martial arts as well as some marksmanship. And many other activities. Field trip is planned to visit the Calvin Coolidge Homestead if they're open. I know Vermont, even though they had a small percentage of COVID cases, is run by a left-wing Republican, so they're going to keep it locked down as long as they can. Thankfully, things in New Hampshire are a little bit better. The unconstitutional mandate was lifted last week. It's very fascinating, though. It's when they lift these mandates. I'm not getting off. Anyway, let me finish the promotion of the camp, and I'll get into the masks. And I'm going to be talking about this nonsense called D.C. statehood and this nonsense called reparations. But so anyway, to learn more about our camp, visit our website, campconstitution.net. Also, if you are traveling from a long distance or flying, we may be able to arrange carpooling. Can't guarantee that, but we do have families that come from the Midwest and the South and are driving up, so there is a possibility. And also, if you're flying in to an airport, we could pick you up and bring you back, as well as train stations. If you're taking a train, you'd probably come to Boston, Route 128. If you're going to be flying in, it might be Logan Airport in Boston or Manchester Airport in New Hampshire. There's even an airport in Lebanon, New Hampshire, just a next town over from Plainfield. So hopefully some of you out there listening would be interested in attending. And if you can't attend, why not make a donation to somebody and make it possible for a worthy young person or family to help make them attend. Anyway, www.campconstitution.net is the website. So let's discuss, first I want to talk about this D.C. statehood. This is something that the left has been pushing for a long time. And what happens when a place becomes a state, you automatically have two U.S. senators and one member of the House of Representatives. And since D.C. is predominantly left, it's something like 90% of the people who live there are leftists, vote left-wing, vote Democrat. It's a safe bet that obviously the two senators will be far leftists, and the congressman, the voting congressman. They do have a non-voting congressman, member of the House, and also they do have three votes in the Electoral College. So they do have some representation. Now, I'm going to be reading. In fact, that was the, was that the 23rd Amendment? I think no. Let me just double check there because that was passed in the late 50s, early 60s, where they got three electoral votes, and they always, always go to the person giving us big government. Let's see. Yeah, I think it was the 23rd. The district constituting the seat of government of the United States shall appoint in such a manner as Congress may direct a number of electors of president and vice president equal to the whole number of senators and representatives in Congress to which the district would be entitled if it were a state, but no event more than the least populous state. They shall be in addition to those appointed by the states, but they shall be considered for the purpose of the election of president and vice president to the electors appointed by a state, and they shall meet in the district and perform such duties as provided by the 12th Article of Amendment. And that was passed in, when was that passed? 1961. So they have three electoral votes. Now, the Congress, the Constitution established Washington, D.C. It wasn't called Washington. I think it was called the Capital District. But on Article 1, Section 8, and what's fascinating about it, it's supposed to be only 10 square miles, but I just did a little search here, and it is actually 68 square miles. That doesn't include the Potomac River. And so this is an article on Section 8, I'm not sure what clause, but towards the end, to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles square as made by secession of particular states in the acceptance of Congress become the seat of the government of the United States, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be, for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. So Congress has the exclusive right over Washington, D.C. Now, they do have a mayor that's elected by the people, and it was carved out of Virginia and Maryland. And what's interesting, too, land from the state of Virginia was eventually returned to the state in 1846. The land in Virginia makes up the modern area of Arlington County and the old part of Alexandria, Virginia, both of which are considered suburbs of Washington. So it's supposed to be 10 square miles. And I'm wondering now if the seat of government is, I don't think it's 10 square miles, though, the capital area where Congress sets the Supreme Court. So that's interesting. So they actually, it's a violation of the Constitution because of the size already. It should be 10 square miles. And my solution, if they say, they don't have representation, they have voting representation in the Senate and Congress. Well, I think what could be done is that they could just resort back to where those states came from. So Maryland, it would be under the vast majority of the people there would be voting in Maryland. So that's, creating a state from the nation's capital is absurd. It would take an amendment. Of course, House Representatives passed it without any trouble. Every Democrat voted for it, I think. Every Republican voted against it, which you see. And by the way, I wouldn't want it to be. Let's say that D.C. was full of right-wing extremists, conservatives. I still wouldn't want to see it become a state because it is not a state. It is the seat of government. It was established to be the seat of government, not to be a separate state. And since there's an amendment that gives it three electoral votes, and Article 1, Section 8 says that it's supposed to be the seat of government, I would think that it would take an amendment to become a state, and I don't see that happening. But we see so much unconstitutional acts being done, this impeachment charade. That was one of the most ridiculous, vindictive, so-called impeachment trials where the Supreme Court justice refused to participate. So it was really a mockery. And, of course, the outcome was that he was not found guilty of any of the charge of insurrection. It is amazing, folks, how the left-wing media, how they control narratives. I hear people, even some conservatives, use the term insurrection. It may have been a riot, but an insurrection that would have been the first unarmed, unorganized insurrection in the history of mankind. Now, there's a lot. I knew people, and we discussed this with Richard Howell, who was on the scene, where he said that many of the police let people in. They just waved them in. And in many other cases, whether agent provocateur, some people believe that they indeed were, because it's very out of character for Trump supporters to engage in that activity. There's Trump rallies all over the country. And the only time when there was any violence is when some leftists were there to provoke violence. There may have been some cases of people hitting each other, but it's the exception to the rule. And another thing is you don't see Trump supporters burning down cities, harassing people in restaurants, destroying courthouses, firebombing police cars, or trying to destroy police stations. That's something that the left does, not Trump supporters. So if you want to look at insurrection, we could see the Black Lives Matter and Antifa people like Maxine Waters, where she talked about confrontations. She is an insurrectionist. She's a traitor. Of course, one could say that, well, she was never on the team to begin with, but she was born in this country. That makes her an American citizen, a U.S. citizen. And she's giving aid and comfort to our enemies, and she is encouraging violence. This trial, the Chauvin trial, one juror actually came out and said they voted because they didn't want riots. Now, I did not spend a lot of time listening or watching the trial. I don't know all of the evidence that was brought forward. Three charges. We see a video, but we don't see the whole picture. But the narrative is that he is a racist, and he woke up that morning intent on committing violence against a black person. And that's a total lie. You really think this guy wanted to beat somebody up, hurt a black man with all kinds of cameras rolling? You've got to be out of your mind. He was a cop in one of the most left-wing cities. It used to be a very beautiful city. I used to get out there on a regular basis, once every 2 months. I prefer St. Paul, but it was a clean city. It was a safe place to be for the most part. Property values were very high. I couldn't believe when I was just looking at the real estate in Minnesota itself, and the cost of a single-family home was about that of what it was in Boston. That really surprised me. But now it's a stinkhole because the left has taken it over. They vote for leftists. They will vote for weak, cowardly, beta male mayors and the city council. It might as well be the Soviet Politburo. So the city is going to be destroyed. And again, once great city is in for what? Because they say that a policeman, a white policeman, is a racist and committed a racist crime against a man who had a horrible police record. He spent time in jail for home invasion. He put a loaded gun to a woman's stomach, pregnant woman's stomach, while his friends ransacked the house. So he wasn't exactly coming back from quiet practice, and that's the narrative. Now, he was not a good man. He was not a good man. It's too bad that he died, but he was a bad man, and he was passing counterfeit bills. He was on drugs. And if he simply just went along he had handcuffs on him, if he just stayed in the cruiser, this would not have happened. Although the left would have found another reason to riot and commit mayhem and murder, because these are the true insurrectionists. And then the lady cop that mistook a taser for a gun for a taser. Now, personally, I don't know how that may be possible. Although it's happened, I guess it happened more than once in the heat of the moment. She may have not been on the beat for a while. I know she was, I think she was a desk sergeant. She had spent 28 years, but she may have been many years off the beat, and so not as sharp as she should be. I don't know. There was a shooting also of a black man called the police. He went out and he had a cell phone that was black, and at first glance, a cop thought it was a gun and shot him. But that's actually happened in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, where a Muslim policeman a white woman from Australia called the police, and she came out with a cell phone in her hand. The white officer was in front of the Muslim, black Muslim Somalian, and he shot her dead. Now, he did go to jail, but you didn't see riots. You didn't see cities burned down to the ground. Interesting. How come when black cops shoot white people, you don't see mayhem and murder? Same thing happened at the D.C. Police during the so-called insurrection. Ashley Babbitt, an unarmed woman, she was not provoking. She was, at the very least, she was trespassing. But now trespassing at the Capitol building is a death sentence. She was summarily executed by a Capitol policeman whose name has not been revealed. No charges will be brought up against him, but it was a black man. I'm sure it's easy enough to find who was on duty that day and kind of narrow things down. And then you have LeBron James, a multimillionaire racist who made his money mainly. If you go to, you watch an NBA game, you will see the predominant number of people in the seats happen to be whites, you know, like 90%, 80% or more. They're the ones that can afford, the wealthy white liberals that can afford box, you know, these expensive seats. They're the ones that made LeBron rich, and he turns his back and he says that basically he hates white people. He lives in a very exclusive white neighborhood with all the security in the world. But he, when he sent that message to, when he tweeted the message about the policeman in Columbus, Ohio, "You're next," he was advocating violence and more riots. That's really what this country needs. We've got a horrible man at the White House. Just him sitting in the White House is doing enough damage to the country without having LeBron weigh in and cause more damage and more mayhem and more hatred. But that's what he does. And thankfully, some people have called him to task. He deleted the tweet and said he didn't want to see more racism. Well, you've got to be kidding me, LeBron. That's what you're about. I'm sure if you imagine a white basketball player, yeah, there might be one or two still in the league. Can you imagine a white basketball player tweeting something about the black Capitol policeman that shot Ashley Babbitt and he said, "You're next"? He'd be hounded out of the NBA and out of society forever. But for some reason, and of course LeBron doesn't care about the black-on-black crime. He doesn't care about the single-family homes, black families without fathers. That's something that the welfare state encouraged, yes, back since the 60s, where a single parent, a mother usually, she gets food stamps and Section 8 housing if she doesn't have a husband. Husbands around don't get as much money, so they encourage this type of behavior. Now, they're still responsible for their actions. I'm not saying that, you know, the government is to be solely blamed, but it makes things a whole lot easier, you know, to destroy a family. And don't tell me that was not the intention. The intention of that, these great society so-called programs were designed to make the families more dependent upon government and to support the policies of big government. I think it was the great economist, author, his name will come to me, and not Tom, it wasn't Thomas Sowell, but anyway, Thomas Sowell, who's written many, many books on Walter Williams, that's it. He wrote a great book called The State Against Blacks, and in that book, he said something to the effect that the black family survived slavery, it survived Reconstruction, it survived the Klan, it survived many things, but it's not surviving the welfare state. In fact, Robert Welch, the founder of the John Birch Society, wrote a letter to the, it was entitled, an article actually, it was called A Letter to the Negroes of the South. And in that letter, and this was published back in the early 60s when that term Negro was accepted, it was not meant to be pejorative. Today it might be considered pejorative to address a black person as a Negro. Anyway, he mentioned all of the incredible progress that black Americans have made since the end of slavery, where there were free slaves, but he said the number of banks they own, the businesses, the churches, the professional level. And he said that if black America was a separate country, it would be second in the world next to white America. In other words, the standard of living for the average black back in the early 60s was better than the average standard of living to the typical white European living in Europe, of course. And even Ebony Magazine back in the 50s made such a claim. He got a lot of that facts right from Ebony Magazine. They reported about the great progress. But then something happened. You know, then the welfare state happened under President Lyndon Baines Johnson. And since then, we've seen, you know, the single-family home crime in the inner cities have gone up and all kinds of other negative things. Even Barack Obama, back in 2008 or 7 when he was on the campaign trail, discussed this. And he gave all the facts and figures about the benefits of living in a family with a mom and dad. You know, and he gave facts, but, you know, the income wages, the just the enormous differences between living in a single-family home or living in a two-mother-father home. Yet you can't discuss this now because it's considered racist. Everything you criticize any of this, you're considered a racist, a white supremacist. This is the narrative, too. The United States is one of the least racist countries in the world. You wouldn't know that when you listen to Biden or listen to Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris, they always have, oh, our racist history, America's racist history. Well, let me say that every single nation in the history of mankind has a racist history. We've done more to rectify that, I would think, than any country in the world. We had a civil war, referred to as a civil war, that resulted in over 500,000 people dying, most of them white. Most, and the result of that is chattel slavery ended. We had all kinds of affirmative action programs in the 60s, minority set-aside programs, and on and on and on, all kinds of things to help blacks, to help. And now they're advocating, the left anyway, the so-called leaders like Al Sharpton are advocating reparations. We're $23 or more trillion in debt. That's not that's even the long-term projection. It's more like $120 trillion in debt, and we have to pay more. He wants more money, and this, what blocks does this include? Does this include immigrants from Haiti or from Somalia, or from India and Jamaica who came here on their own? They weren't forced here. In fact, nobody was forced here, except maybe some of the sex slave trafficking, which is going on, and it's probably going on at a larger rate thanks to the mask mandate. Kamala Harris, her father's from Jamaica, mother is from India. India is the most racist country in the world, and I understand that her ancestors were involved in the slave trade. So if you want to look at systemic racism, look at herself in the mirror. And Joe Biden, he has a history of making racist comments, even recently. If you don't vote for me, you ain't black, man. And what he said about Obama, that he's one of the first clean, articulate blacks, smart, clean, articulate blacks. I mean, can you imagine if Donald Trump said something like that, or Ted Cruz, if he said that about a black conservative? You know, it would be horrible. The left would never forget that. But when they say things like this routinely, it's forgotten. In fact, when Lyndon Johnson signed the so-called Civil Rights Act, he said something to the effect that this will give us the blankety-blank vote. He used a racial epithet for the next 100 years. So all he cared about was the vote. He really didn't care about blacks, and he said that he would always racial epithets in the White House. He was a vile man, a racist. But because he signed the Civil Rights Act, boy, they love him. He's a hero. Probably put a few statues of him around. Now, I want to get into the mask mandate a little bit here. With the WHO and the CDC, the WHO basically is an arm of the Chinese government, the World Health Organization, and the CDC, Center for Disease Control. I recommend the book by Jim Perloff. We had Jim on as a guest not too long ago, and just the other day we had him speak at the Lane House in the greater Boston area. He gave an excellent presentation on the subject. And I'm almost through the book. It's a very easy book to read. We uploaded the audio part of that presentation on our Podomatic page just last night. And we're in the process of uploading the video on our YouTube channel. We may just put it on our Rumble channel because YouTube has a tendency to ban, take down any videos that do not promote the communist line on the COVID. And I'm serious, by the way. The CEO of YouTube said that if it doesn't violate, if it doesn't conform with the policies of the WHO and CDC, we will not allow it to air. And you imagine that? You imagine when it comes to any science, any kind of scientific breakthrough that does not conform to the deep state, that they will not play it. It's just amazing. It's just we live in this Orwellian nightmarish world. Now, I have an Army gas mask that I just purchased at an Army and Navy store gun shop not too far from me. These were the masks very similar to the ones that we were issued when I was in the Army back in the 70s and early 80s. Now, these masks, everybody who went through basic training has to go into a gas chamber where they have tear gas. And your mask is on. And, of course, you have to be sealed, or if you don't have a seal, the mask is useless. And then you're supposed to take the mask off and recite your name, rank, and serial number. I got as far as my first name. I couldn't. I was overcome by the gas, and then they let you run out of the chamber. And that's supposed to give you a healthy respect for gas warfare, chemical warfare. Now, these masks protect the wearer from nuclear, biological, and chemical. If we survived a nuclear blast, I think they said the mask is good for about 15 minutes. In other words, you got to get the heck out of that zone as quickly as possible. But strangely enough, that mask, when it filters, still cannot filter out the COVID-19 virus. And that gas mask is probably, I don't know what the ratio is, probably 100,000 times, if not a million times, more effective at filtering out nasty stuff than the cloth, the surgical mask that people wear, these little face diapers, as some people call them, or scarves. You know, scarves, okay, if it's dusty out, if it's rainy out, not if it's dusty, if the wind's kicking up and there's leaves around, all the things, dirt blowing in your face, that might be a good thing to put on for a short while just so keep the dust. Or if you're riding a horse, maybe, or riding on a motorcycle, if you don't have a helmet, or a face shield, you might wear a scarf, to basically keep stuff out of you. But it's not going to stop the virus. Now, you get people to this day, the mask mandate started back in May of last year, in some places April. You've got people that I think have either welded these things onto their face or stitched them on. They will not take them off. Even when they lift the mandates. And just yesterday I was at a recital. It was a dance competition for my daughter. It was held in New Hampshire, but most of the people were from Massachusetts. And here are these poor girls, young teenage girls, dancing on the stage, in many cases all by themselves, wearing a mask. You know, there was one group that wasn't. Everybody sitting there inside wearing a mask, except for me. And it was just, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I said, you can take the and get out, outside, and wear the mask. They're in their car, they're wearing the mask. And I think that the deep staters that have promoted the fear of the COVID-19 virus must be laughing. They must be just shaking their head. They probably say, we're successful beyond our wildest imagination. They can't believe how successful they are in promoting this fear. A fear of a virus with, what, a 99-point-something% success rate? And when you read Jim's book or listen to his presentation, you will find out that all these casualties, these almost 600,000 people that have allegedly died of the COVID, in most cases, many of these people that have died already had serious illnesses or comorbidity, they call it. Either had cancer, they were obese, or diabetes, or many other things. And in some cases, they're going to the hospitals, and if they're tested for COVID, if they're positive for COVID, they'll say they're a COVID casualty. The CDC actually advised foreigners to put that in there. If there's a trace of COVID, that they most likely died from COVID-19. And any honest professional will never, you don't, we can't say that you, we think you died from COVID. You either did or you didn't. So they're lying on these death certificates. That's the policy. It's to scare people. And they do not want to open up this country. They are just horrified. Although I just heard that the first Fauci said, it was a few weeks ago, that if you have a vaccine, you should still wear the mask. Now he's coming out and saying, well, if you get the vaccine, you probably don't need to wear a mask outside. He said it's the probability of getting COVID. I forget his exact words, but he said the same thing when he said that you don't need to wear a mask back in March. He said March of 2020. He said you don't need to wear a mask. Well, it looks like we're running out of time, folks. You've been listening to Hal Shurtleff on Camp Constitution Radio on WBCQ The Planet. And until next week, may God richly bless you, and thank you for listening.
Are you a gig worker or self-employed? Wombly has helped over 100,000 small businesses get a PPP loan. You may qualify for up to $41,000 in 100% forgivable loans. The program ends soon and funds are limited. Apply now at womply.com/apply. That's WOMPLY.com/apply.